Hi, I'm Phil Bliss. Welcome to Stop, Think, Focus, Execute. Today I'd like to introduce you to Richard Disruptive Man Boy, who is about to give a very disruptive profile of himself.
Yeah, I guess if I had to summarize my background of disruption, I've spent roughly 27 years focused on, as a serial entrepreneur, focused on using computer gaming technologies and applying them in a number of different ways beyond just entertainment. I guess we're most noteworthy for creating Red Storm Entertainment for all the gaming fans out there. We created Red Storm Entertainment with Tom Clancy. We did another game company with Michael Crichton, the author, another game company with Ozzy Osbourne, and another with, we just did a game with one of my good friends, Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, my entire career has really been one of following passions, mostly working with people I really respect and trying to find people smarter than me to surround myself with.
Yeah.
That's certainly an MO of mine. We've done all six companies we've worked on together right here in North Carolina, which flies in the face of a lot of advice, I think, that people give in the venture community today. Pretty much all of the VCs today will tell you, go west, young man or woman, because that's where the money is and where all of the opportunity is. I happen to believe that we ought to be able to work anywhere we want to with the people we want to and focused on the problems we want to work on.
I'm interested in two or three of those moments of stop, think, focus, execute, when you've been doing something you weren't liking and you've changed things. Maybe you can discuss one of those game ventures and that process, basically.
Right after we sold Red Storm Entertainment to Ubisoft in about 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very successful venture. I wish we'd held on to it a little bit. Today, that franchise does $1 billion a year, I've been told. So I wish we'd held on to it a little bit. We decided to sit down in an environment like this and cast a purposeful line into the future. So that following some of the advice you've been dispensing to me today. And we said smartphones. But remember, this is 2001. If you remember that the climate of that time, a smartphone meant like a Palm Trio.
Yeah.
Meant you had a little screen.
Yeah.
But it was just a far cry from what we use today or what we think of today as a smartphone. So none of that was really very mature. And we'd gone to Japan and we'd seen what NTT Docomo had done with how they supported independent software vendors. And we said, this is great. So we got introduced to a guy named Joichi Ito there, who today is the director of the MIT Media Lab. Very brilliant guy who we're all proud to call friend. He's actually the guy who's probably the most disruptive man that I know. So he made an investment in us around this idea of a document management using these smartphones at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was way too early, but we started meeting with Nextel and Sprint and all the various carriers here, and they had no clue about the idea of an iTunes store-like approach. They just said, hey, your software looks great. Yeah, just sell it to our users. And we said, well, I'll need tens of millions of dollars to market to them directly. You're already talking to them every day. Can you just provide a portal of some kind so that we can invest in that? We couldn't get any of them to really have a clue about it. Then September 11th happened, and we all were jolted by that.
Yeah, we
and said, all right, you know, we have this really powerful mobile document capability. How can we help the logistics systems in what we're obviously gearing up to do here? So we went around and met with the usual suspects. Through Tom Clancy, we'd already had a pretty good list of
folks. You'd had that circus already, yeah.
And we're already well known, in fact, because the Marines and the folks down here in Bragg, we're all using Rainbow Six and Ghost Recon. We designed them as tactical games, like realistic.
Mm-hmm.
It was the very first realistic tactical shooter game. So we were able to open those doors, and we went around and tried to sell them this document management system. And then we had an aha moment.
This is the thing.
Yeah, it was getting together and going, you know, we might have mistimed this whole smartphone phenomenon, especially here in the U.S., and clearly we did by about 6 years. So we took stock of what were our assets. It was like, hey, we're really good at building games. And everywhere we went, people were talking about Rainbow Six and Ghost Recon, and we thought everyone was already very familiar with the idea of simulation for airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
But how about simulation for teaching you how to set up a radar dish in the desert or to operate in a small unit tactical group like JSOC? when we finally said, all right, let's go back to our roots of game-based simulation and let's apply it to learning. And that's what I did for the next 7 years. We built the very first simulations that were validated by U.S. Army TRADOC, Training and Doctrine Command, and set precedent for how everybody would be able to use game-based simulation to shorten the path to mastery.
So it's interesting that you realized it was a place to be versus, you know, waiting 6 years for the mobile handset side of it to catch up with your software.
You know, it was a decade of preparation and capability that met that need, and that was the opportunity.
Where from there that you got this business going, tell me a little bit about stopping and going on to the next phase.
Well, shortly thereafter, we just decided, hey, let's sell. And so we sold the company to Lockheed. But prior to doing that, we actually spun out a little game company. So we took a pod of our game developers, spun out a company called Republic of Fun, now recognizing in 2006 that the smartphone
was back.
Industry
was
actually
there.
Going
was
to
right
come.
There.
So like, oh, there it is. There's this thing we've been tracking for the last six years. Let's not miss it. So we took a little advanced reconnaissance squad and spun them out into a company called Republic of Fun and had a hit right out of the gate. We created a game called Tiki Towers, which is very similar to Angry Birds.
That's good fun.
And it was 2009 International Casual Game of the Year. Over 1 million copies sold. And back then, you didn't give it away for free. There was no model for giving away games for free. So it was about $3. But meanwhile, I was then pulled into the Death Star.
You were Lockheed by that.
Then I went to Lockheed. And the plan there was
How did you deal with that? Lockheed versus this is so different. I'm interested in that thought process.
Yeah, we had a lot of heartfelt conversations about it between myself and a guy named Dale Bennett, who's now president of one of the biggest divisions inside of Lockheed. But we recognized right away that, hey, and in fact, the engineering term for that is impedance mismatch, right? When you take artists and game developers with pierced eyebrows and tattoos and who don't wear shoes and try to put them in a room with honest-to-God rocket scientists, other than my friend Ken Lane here, it was a little bit of an unnatural thing to look at.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
But that's what they needed. And the great thing about Dale's vision is he recognized, hey, the stuff you're doing is having real results that are being validated at the end of it. So you're cutting training times in half. You're increasing passing rates from 60% to 100% using your game-based learning. So we need that.
The reason that you hooked on to the Lockheed experience was because of what you got to do. It's that stop, think moment. You've changed things. Disruptive man.
So I'll tell you the disruptive man story. I was running around speaking to various groups within Lockheed, and my boss at the time changed my title to Director of Emerging and Disruptive Technology. They didn't have like a category for what I did. So he gave me that title, which I thought was really unusual and interesting. And we had our own group called Virtual World Labs that had its own logo, so at Lockheed Martin, but then had its, just like the Skunk Works logo at Lockheed, had its own logo, had its own website, just broke all of the rules that this 100-year-old company had around identity and everything. So I ended up meeting Anish Chopra, who was CTO at the White House at the time. And we were talking, and then we ended up in a larger group talking about innovation. And he couldn't remember my name, so he just said, oh yeah, just like Disruptive Man over here was saying. And so it ended up sticking. So
why aren't you still there?
Why am I still not at Lockheed?
Yeah, because I mean, it sounds like such a challenging scenario, you know, to apply innovation to apply the things that you've kind of grown up with. What made you step out of that? You know, not the safety of it, just to make it stop and step out and move to something else.
The refocus of Lockheed back on the core business, as they would call it. Which is basically the government. If it's not a government thing, what are we doing? You know, why
defense,
are we not doing it?
Aviation.
And the analysts started punishing them for anything that they did that wasn't in that core business. So I realized pretty quickly, he's like, well, if I want to continue doing these things I care about, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, move out. But not before inventing, you know, my team had over 100 patents on a variety of technologies in AR, VR, AI.
But you did stop. And you thought again. Let's talk a little bit about where you are now.
we created a company to focus on the next thing we thought was coming. We're still waiting to see if we've timed this one correctly.
It's always a problem. The timing is.
It is.
Been there, done that.
It's a Cassandra-like problem to be correct, but not necessarily have the timing right. But I think we have timed this one correctly. We're focused on the critical issue of the 21st century, which I think is achieving the right balance between humans and automation to optimize the outcome.
So in terms of the stop, think, focus, execute, where are you on that ramp? And imagine the focus is pretty abstract.
Yeah, I would call almost a stop, focus, misfire is what we did initially. I think we were right, but maybe we missed the timing on that just a little bit. So in this case, maybe a little bit late. With a product called NomiBot, we intended to create an automated system of these bots, these minions that you would have on your phone that only serve you. And I'd read Doc Searle's book, The Intention Economy. And one thing that bothers me about social media is it's all about monetizing human attention.
Absolutely.
The beneficiary of social media isn't us, it's them. Yeah. Right? So I wanted to create technology that really just helps you we called it initially the antisocial social network. But these bots that would go out and filter the net, they would learn your preferences. It's driven by machine learning, so it's constantly learning what you're interested in. You know, how do you want to shop? Like, what kind of blazers am I interested in? Like, I can put a bot out there that is always looking for a Hugo Boss blazer that's under $300. Normally they're $800, but I'm gonna put an RFP out there with my bot that's always looking. So creating a world like that, where instead of us having to adapt ourselves to technology, technology's adapting to us and empowering us. Now, that creates some business model issues. So when we came out with NomiBot, I actually had some Pokemon elements in there,
okay,
you know, where you're caring for your bots, mm-hmm, and you can capture bots that have certain knowledge sources and that kind of thing. We didn't execute on all of that. It's just the model I was never comfortable with, because the only real way to make money on a free app, you know, is with advertising and monetizing human attention. So we had another moment where we stopped, looked at what we had, thought about it, and took a different vector with our action, and that was to say, let's create a product that is critical for the workflow of information workers. Let's create it for ourselves, first of all. We're app developers.
Yeah.
There's this concept of the full stack worker, right? Where all of us have to understand the full stack, because there's not that many of us. So we have to stay on top of all of these changes. Like, what's the best cloud service we could be using? What's the best analytics tools? What are the best? And so how do we stay on top of that? And we can sit there and search all the time, or just create a static Google alert that tries to find things. Or I could create a machine learning system that's constantly going out there and finding things around specific topics and populating these, we call them smart boards.
But are those bots trackable, or are they?
Oh, no, it's only, they only do your bidding. They're not exposed to anybody else. You can actually make the boards you're creating public or private. We don't sell data. That helps me sleep at night a lot better than if I knew I was capturing data, then reselling it to others. Our expectation is that people will value the fact that it is just for them, and that it is doing work on their behalf and making their lives a little better, and they'll pay for it.
Just everyone, I mean, I'd love you to go to Richard's site, sizzle.it, and read his manifesto.
Please do.
It's pretty much what a lot of us geeks are at the moment. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Richard Boyd, CEO of Sizzle, in beautiful downtown Durham in North Carolina. I'm Phil Bliss. Thanks for watching. And I want you to stop, think, focus, execute, and take another look at your digital world and innovate.